Welcome to Rails with Jason. I'm Jason Sweat. A quick word before today's episode. If you're a Rails developer, there's a good chance you're writing tests. If you want to get better at writing tests, or if you're not currently writing tests and you want to learn how, go to codewithjason.com where you can find my free Ruby testing micro course. Now on to the episode. Welcome to Rails with Jason. I'm Jason Sweat, and I'm here today with my guest, Noel Rappin. Noel, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jason. Glad to be here.
Noel, for the listeners who haven't heard of you before, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. My name is, as you said, Noel Rappin. I am, you can follow me on Twitter, at Noel Rapp. I should say that. Somebody might actually choose to do it. I am a principal developer at TableXI, which is a consulting company in Chicago. I run a podcast for them myself, which is called Tech Done Right. I'm also the author of the Rails Test Prescription series and a book called Take My Money, which is about payment processing. A book called Take My Money, which is about payment processing. And I'm currently working on a book about Rails 6 client-side stuff, including Stimulus and Webpacker.
Awesome. And that latter item is going to be kind of the focus of our discussion today, front-end stuff in Rails, including Stimulus and some other kind of related stuff. So what exactly are you writing about in addition to Stimulus?
Yeah, so Stimulus, to back up a little, a half step. So Stimulus is not technically a part of Rails, but it is a very lightweight JavaScript library that was also abstracted out of Basecamp and which shares a lot of the Basecamp Rails philosophy of how to structure code. Webpacker is the default asset pipeline in Rails 6, replacing Sprockets. And it is essentially a somewhat more Rails-ish wrapper around Webpack for building, for doing asset pipeline things, for taking your JavaScript and style sheets and whatever and turning them into browser-friendly style sheets and JavaScript.
Okay. So with Stimulus in particular, if you want to use that in a Rails application, is that something you would include separately? You don't get it out of the box?
Right. Yeah. Stimulus is a node module. It gets delivered through Yarn and goes into your package .json file, and it is a very lightweight JavaScript framework designed for things where a single page app framework like React is too much complication for what you need to do, but where you want to have a little bit of structure, the kind of thing where you might have otherwise turned to jQuery and written a bunch of spaghetti code in jQuery. Stimulus is a nicely structured way of doing that kind of interaction.
Okay, and I'm going to ask you some questions from the perspective of a person who has very little familiarity with either Webpack or Stimulus. So personally, I've been using JavaScript forever since the 90s to make the little thing go across the scroll bar at the bottom of Netscape Navigator.
Yeah.
But haven't touched Webpacker. I've touched Webpack a tiny bit a long time ago. Haven't touched Stimulus at all. The first thing I'm curious about is package management. So I'm familiar with NPM and a little bit familiar with Yarn, just in the sense that it's kind of analogous to NPM, as I understand.
Yeah.
And I'd like that. I also used Bower in the past, which was kind of a similar idea. Rather than just downloading libraries using your browser and then manually including those, the idea of having an actual file that lists your dependencies and it reconciles the version numbers against each other and stuff like that makes a lot of sense. So how does that stuff work in Rails 6 with Webpacker?
So, okay. Backing up, going through the ages, right? Rails has this long, somewhat contentious history with the fact that Rails apps often need to use JavaScript. In the very, very early days, one of Rails' selling points was that it was easier to do what was then sort of universally referred to as AJAX calls in Rails, that it shipped out of the box with the ability to do that kind of thing. And what that meant at the time initially was you could very easily have a button push in your Rails view trigger a behind the scenes non-page refresh call to a server that would return a bunch of HTML that you could automatically drop in a new place. That was essentially the limit of, and that was a significant difference between Rails and some of the other frameworks from that time. Django in particular did not have that functionality out of the box. And it was one of the things that was a real selling point for Rails. Over the years, Rails has had a couple of different ways of interacting with JavaScript. You may remember RJS, which let you use Ruby to compile to simple JavaScript.
I remember that. I remember seeing stuff about that at least.
Yeah, so that was a subset of JavaScript interactions that you could write in a Ruby DSL kind of thing. Eventually, Rails settled on using a tool called Sprockets, and what Rails would call the asset pipeline, as a way of doing this sort of hard to explain simply thing where the purpose of the asset pipeline Sprockets, the purpose of Webpack, is to take all of the code that you write in whatever structure you choose to write it and package it up into something that can easily be handled by the browser, whether that means post-processing it or transpiling it from CoffeeScript to JavaScript or whatever JavaScript version. Module resolution, whatever, minification, whatever else you would do to create a browser-friendly asset.
And if somebody wants to learn more about like why all that stuff happens, you can learn at least partially. I read this book, it was like 10 years ago now, so I don't know how relevant it would be. There's this book by this guy, Steve Souders, called High Performance Websites. And it talked about how for any particular website, he did kind of a study at Yahoo where he worked, and he discovered that most of the bottleneck was on the front end. The page would take, the HTML would take like 10% of the time, total time of rendering the page. And then the rest of the stuff was just dealing with JavaScript and assets and stuff like that. And so out of that book came these 10 front end performance principles, like, it's faster if you have, let's say, 12 JavaScript files. Rather than loading all 12 of those, it's faster to package them up into one single JavaScript file because there's a little bit of overhead for downloading each one. So stuff like that. All of it, I think, but that's at least part of what the asset pipeline does, right?
Right. And over time, these principles have gotten built into tools. So you have tools that allow you to write JavaScript in multiple files, but convert it to a single file, you know, that allow you to do name resolution and then manage that automatically when they package it together, or that, you know, minify or compress the size of the JavaScript file so it takes less time in network. And Webpack, so Webpack, which is the existing JavaScript tool, as opposed to Webpacker, which is the Rails gem, and it drives me nuts that they named it so similarly. It's even better because Webpack in its official documentation is lowercase and Webpacker is uppercase in its official documentation.
Oh boy.
Which is exciting. It's a good choice. So Webpack is the tool that seems to have gotten eventually has gotten the most mind share. And essentially what Webpack does is you give it Webpack's concepts are like an entry point, and then like outputs, and then plugins, what are essentially transformations. They call them that's not the term that they use internally, but that's essentially what happens. So you in Webpack, you define an entry point, which is usually a file that is more or less a manifest. It includes all of the tools that you're going to deal with. It includes all the files that you're going to use. And usually doesn't do a whole lot else. And then you specify an output, both in terms of like what the local file of that output is, and then also how the server is supposed to get to it, like a URL for it. And then you supply a bunch of transformations, and those transformations could be like files that end in TS are TypeScript files, and they need to be run through the TypeScript compiler, or they need to, or you know, SCSS files need to get run through the SAS compiler, or all your JavaScript files need to get run through the minifier.
And I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that the Rails gives us some sensible defaults for these things, and you can just kind of go out of the box. You don't have to do a bunch of configuration before you can do a hello world.
Right. So what I one of the ways I like to say this is that Webpack's role in life is to take all of these, I'll let you write the code however you want and convert it to a nice output for the browser. And Webpacker's goal in life is Webpack is really complicated. Let's make it simpler. And so it gives you kind of a rail in sort of Rails aesthetic style. It gives you some sensible defaults. So anything that you put in a specific directory, which is app JavaScript packs by default, is considered an entry point. And the exit point is goes to by default the public slash packs directory, and then it also comes with a set of loaders by default, so that you don't need to worry about certain basic transformations. And it also has presets for a number of really popular JavaScript frameworks and tools. So there's a preset for TypeScript, there's a preset for React, there's a preset for Elm. And the presets load in the correct module, add the correct modules to your package.json file, and they also set up a hello world entry point for you to start with, and a couple, and then some of them do a couple of other things, but that's basically it. So it does the, it gives you the Rails thing of convention over configuration, and it gives you a set of reasonably sensible production and deployment production and development defaults for the way that your code works. And if your application is not super complicated, you may not have to touch them at all.
Okay. And I actually had another guest on where the topic overlapped a little bit, and we touched on the topic of deploying with Webpacker. And I think according to what we talked about in that episode, you can just deploy a Webpacker Rails application to Heroku, and Heroku will pick it up just fine, and it'll work without any special extra steps. Is that the case?
Yeah, the same asset precompile that you would have done in Sprockets will do the same, essentially the same compile of your Webpacker assets, and it will drop them in your public packs directory, and they'll just get picked up. There's a helper method. So instead of using JavaScript include tag, there are helper methods called JavaScript pack tag and spreadsheet pack tag that direct the that prompt the browser to load the proper version of the asset file.
Okay.
So yeah, and they basically just work with the existing deployment tools.
If we could just switch gears a little bit, I'd like to talk about Stimulus, if you're up for it. And I'm curious, how much of what you're writing about is focused on Stimulus? Is that just kind of one of many like frameworks that you're writing about, or is it?
So the book, as currently set up, and it might change, is going to start off by talking about TypeScript and Webpacker. It's then going to talk about doing a Rails app with Stimulus, and it's going to talk about doing a Rails app with React. And then we're going to talk generally about debugging and testing, and we'll see where that leads us. I would desperately want to do Elm, but I think that would be way too confusing for one book. But I really like working with Elm, but it's probably out of scope for the book. I'll do it as an extra. So Stimulus and React is kind of a stand-in in this case. It's the most popular of a series of frameworks that have become sort of conceptually much more similar than they were a few years ago, in that they have different details, but they all sort of work in terms of things that they more or less call components. And they more or less deal with managing internal state and updating the DOM when the state changes.
Okay. So maybe we'll dig into that a little bit, but first I want to touch on Stimulus. I have never used Stimulus at all. I've also never used React at all. And so I was reading the stimulus handbook a little bit today to kind of just see what I'm going to be talking about in this podcast episode. And I found it pretty interesting. I read the origin of stimulus portion of the documentation, and it wasn't exactly news to me because I know how DHH feels about modern front-end frameworks and stuff like that. And I kind of feel a similar way, which is basically, it's a little bit, there's a certain amount of insanity, where, and a certain amount of just cargo culting and stuff like that.
I think if I think if you want to be a little bit more neutral, I think there's a lot of incidental complexity to the JavaScript.
I don't want to be neutral. I just want to be, I don't know what the word is, mean, something like that.
Stimulus is not a cutting edge, new structured JavaScript framework by design. Like it is definitely meant to be a little bit of a throwback.
I feel like it's a pendulum type thing where there's a swing in one direction and then kind of a reactive swing in the other direction. Yeah. And just like to contextualize a little bit, although this probably isn't news to many listeners, you know, we had the old days of web development where there was just a little JavaScript in our web applications. And then we had, when did it first start? Was it like Angular was the first popular, like full-blown JavaScript? No, Backbone, maybe you could consider.
Backbone wasn't, I think of this as having gone in a couple of different phases. One of which was the original like Ajax phase, which started about the time Gmail came out in like 2004, and did things that people would not have thought like doable in browser land up till then. And then you had sort of increasingly complicated JavaScript frameworks. And then, Angular, Ember were sort of a change in structure because they were, first of all, designed to support single-page apps, so handling the page transitions on the JavaScript side. And they are also designed to automatically bind the DOM elements to the values of the of your state. So when you change the state variable, it would automatically update the DOM. And to me, that's like the main differentiation structurally between the React, Angular, Ember view side of the world and then not that side of the world.
And in a lot of ways, I find that structure super valuable. And it was certainly an improvement over having a whole bunch of jQuery spaghetti code. And so that's good in those ways. What seemed to happen is that a lot of developers developed the belief that new equals good and old equals outdated. And so we should never, ever do JavaScript without having a full-blown front-end framework and having a single-page architecture, client-server architecture, where the front-end is completely separated from the back-end. And so there was kind of this proliferation of that structure of application, in my experience at least, when you have a lot of applications where a CRUD application with little or no JavaScript would have done the job just fine, but instead it's a single page application.
So I tend to think of it that single, there are good reasons to do a single page application. One of which is like that you really do have multiple front ends. Like you have a mobile front end and you have a web front end and who knows what all. And so you really are best served by having your server be just an API. I also think that like the further your interaction gets from like a traditional form and page interaction, like the more those single page app tools kind of help. But if you're doing something that, like you said, is essentially just a lot of, can be conceptualized as a lot of CRUD or RESTful like state interactions, then there's a lot less power to the single page app because there's a lot more power to what the browser and the server side things can do for you. Like browsers do a lot, and doing a single page app and maintaining all of that state means you're taking that, you're not letting the browser manage that state for you.
And especially with Rails has, for example, all these form helpers. The form helpers save so much time, And if you go the client server route when you didn't need to, then you're throwing away all that form helper benefits.
Right. And I think that over time, the JavaScript tools in general have like built up a lot of that functionality, but to my mind, it comes at a pretty high complexity cost relative to Rails. And I say that like, I'm somewhat more comfortable with Rails, but not that much more comfortable relative to some of these frameworks. And I do find them a little bit. So what happened in my case is that we had an application which was essentially kind of like a wizard. It was a series of forms that worked together. And we had the option of doing it as a single page application, or we had the option of doing it as essentially a series of Rails RESTful pages with a bunch of JavaScript enhancements. And we kind of spiked it out in React. And like, it's not really a single page app. It's part of a larger app, and it's not clear that there's a huge conceptual advantage to thinking of it, this part of it, as a single page app. And React just seemed like a lot of overhead for what we were trying to do. And we looked at Stimulus, and with the like structure that we had in place, which was that we were going to then do it as a series of sort of Rails RESTful pages, Stimulus wound up being really nice. So the reason for that, I think, well, let me back up and talk about what Stimulus is. The first I actually heard of Stimulus was in a conversation at RailsConf with DHH before it was released. He was talking about it with a couple. I was on the edges of a conversation that he was having about what he didn't like about JavaScript stuff. And he was talking about how Basecamp had abstracted away this really common pattern and that they would eventually start release it as its own tool. And that became Stimulus. And so Stimulus is designed, it has a couple of design options. It's very much not meant to handle single page apps. It's very much meant to, it describes itself as like a framework for the HTML you already have. So it very much is for the setup where you already have a server-driven markup and you want to add interactivity to it.
You wouldn't have to do a big re-architecting in order to adopt the framework.
No, you really don't. That's part of the point. Like you don't. It works off the code, the markup you already have. And it has a very, very small number of concepts. It has a concept of a controller, which is basically where all the code goes. It has the concept of an action, which is something that you trigger on the page that refers code to a method of a controller. It has a target, which is a DOM element on the page, which is of special interest to a controller. And it has data maps that it stores where controllers can store state in the DOM. So they're storing it actually as part of the DOM. And you define controllers and actions and targets and these things by actually making changes to the markup. So it uses the data attributes in the markup in your HTML to say, I want to instantiate a controller here. I want an action to happen when I click on this. And then it uses a little bit of convention to turn those actions, to dispatch those actions to specific controllers, to instantiate controllers when it sees an element with a data controller attribute, data-controller, and to sort of manage the bookkeeping of it. So what you wind up with is a system that is really, really good at, when I trigger this JavaScript event, I want this relatively lightweight piece of code to execute. So you don't have to mess around with event listeners. You don't have to worry about when things get added to the DOM, because Stimulus takes care of it. And so you don't really have to worry about too much about namespacing and structuring, because Stimulus has fairly reasonable ways of understanding which controllers are active over a particular part of the page. So you can do things, relatively simple things that are adding certain kinds of interactivity with a pretty low amount of code overhead. And that turned out to be really nice for us.
Does Stimulus have opinions about how you structure your JavaScript code as far as directories and all that kind of stuff?
The controllers basically need to live all in a particular directory because it has a little bit of like loading magic that it does to automatically load anything that is in a directory that is a file that ends with controller.
Okay.
So it has that. Beyond that, no, it doesn't really, and Webpacker in general doesn't really make too many assumptions about the way that you want to structure your code. It is sort of a design goal of Stimulus that the controllers wind up being pretty small, and that if you have a lot of complicated interactions, it kind of wants you to create multiple controllers rather than have one big controller. Okay. And so as a result of that, there's sort of a natural path where certain kinds of logic sort of get abstracted out into classes rather than getting shared among the, as a way of sharing them among the controllers. But it doesn't really mandate that. It just, the only thing it really mandates is that the controllers sort of need to exist in a particular place in order to get auto-loaded.
A challenge that I'm having in an application that I'm working in right now is my Rails models are pretty well structured. There's app models, and I have active record classes in there. I have some poros in there. I've moved some things out into the lib folder. I've moved some things into concerns, and there's not one single directory with like a whole bunch of files. So that's pretty good in that area. But then in app assets JavaScripts, it's just all flat. And there's like dozens and dozens of JavaScript files in there, and that's bad. And I haven't gotten around yet to trying to figure out some way to structure that. It sounds like Stimulus doesn't try to address that problem. That's kind of something you have to tackle yourself.
No, it tries to address the complexity of getting the interaction set up in the first place. But yeah, the code for that kind of large code structure, you're kind of on your own.
That's something that I found maddening about Angular when I started using it. Angular 1 is that there's no opinion on how you're supposed to structure your application, and I couldn't really find any consensus online, and people did it all sorts of different ways. Angular 2 was a little bit different. It seemed like they wanted you to do the what was it called? It was like component based directory structuring. Mm-hmm. Which was a little weird to me because it's like instead of separation by layer like I'm used to in a Rails application where I have JavaScript in one directory, CSS in a different directory, you would have a component with a CSS, HTML, and JavaScript file all in there.
Right.
Have you found any sort of convergence where people tend to structure their Rails JavaScript in a certain way? Or do you do it a certain way at Table XI, or how do you tackle that?
So I think all of our projects do a little bit differently because they're doing kind of different things. One of the nice things about Stimulus in this context is that the interactions, the JavaScript is actually declared in the Rails view, in the ERB or HAML or whatever you're using, which makes it relatively clear from looking at the Rails view where JavaScript interaction happens. Which is something that can be challenging in like a jQuery world or unobtrusive jQuery world, where it can be hard to sometimes tell where things are happening. So that kind of structure, that sort of semantic structure, structuring, it gives you some support for. As far as the rest of it goes, we wound up in this particular app, we wound up with some kind of service level JavaScript objects like support objects, and we put them in their own separate directory, and all the controllers stayed in one directory. And that was enough complexity for us. In this case, the bigger, a bigger application with a lot more JavaScript would probably need a little bit more structure, I would imagine.
I'm going to ask you one or two more questions, then we'll head to the portion of the episode where we tell listeners where they can find you and stuff, which you kind of already told us, but we can repeat it. My question is, what's the learning curve like on Stimulus? I imagine that it's not too steep, and it seems like there's not a ton of stuff to learn relative to something like React or Angular. How have you found it?
Yeah, it was pretty easy to teach the people. I'm about to do a workshop where I'm going to go through all of the major concepts in well under an hour and a half. using it well takes a little bit longer, but there are just not a lot of concepts to it. And they're all pretty straightforward. The thing that is a little bit tricky to get used to is I think that like there's sort of an idiomatic style, I think, where you have a lot of controllers and a lot of actions. So a particular object can belong to multiple controllers and could dispatch multiple actions when it's clicked, which is one of the ways that sort of the controllers stay small. And I think getting used to that takes a little bit of like, there's a little bit of getting used to its sort of way of approaching the world to get that right. But the basics of it, like I said, there's really only four concepts and you could probably get by with only three of them if you wanted. So.
And final question, let's say you had an application that was just vanilla JavaScript, no framework. Do you have an idea for how you would approach refactoring that to use Stimulus if you decided that was a good idea?
Yeah, I think that you would start by, you could do it on kind of an interaction pattern by interaction pattern basis, that you could start with taking one particular event listener and turning it into a Stimulus controller. Like you wouldn't need to do it one all at once, but you can do, you could take each individual, an individual event listener in like a jQuery spaghetti world would be an action effectively in Stimulus. So you could convert it to an action inside a controller and set it up and sort of do it piecemeal, you know, one piece at a time.
Okay. Okay. And again, you already shared your Twitter handle and stuff, but do you just want to give listeners where they can find you online and stuff like that?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at NoelRap, N-O-E-L-R-A-P. NoelRappin.com usually has information about things that I'm working on. And the podcast that I've been doing, my podcast is at techdonewrite.io. It's got
awesome.
Its own set of cool stuff.
All right. Well, Noel, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.